200 years ago, a group of renegade German writers and philosophers came together in a small town and forever changed who we think we are. That's the story Andrea Wolf tells in her book Magnificent Rebels, The First Romantics and the Invention of the Self. So it's not often that you come across a work of intellectual history with a plot like a Netflix series, but Magnificent Rebels is a rare and riveting book. Steve Paulson, for one, couldn't put it down. It's the story of the birth of an idea that changed the world, a new vision of what it means to be a self, to have a unique, individual, personal identity. But it reads like an 18th century bachelorette, with a bunch of charismatic geniuses hopping in and out of bed with each other. And it all begins, as all good stories do, with a remarkable woman, Carolina Schlegel.
She was a woman who really refused to be restricted by the role that society had intended for her. She spoke several languages fluently. She was beautiful. She was witty. She was educated. And she was fiercely independently minded. And she married young, but she was widowed by the age of 24. So she hung out with German revolutionaries, only to be then imprisoned by the Prussians for being a sympathizer with the French Revolution. So she and her 7-year-old daughter, Auguste, ended up in prison for several months. And not only that, in prison, she discovered that she was pregnant after a one-night stand with an 18-year-old French soldier after a wild ball night, which was, you know, quite something at a time when it was seen as being pretty scandalous just to be on your own with a man in a room. She was not really deterred by these obstacles. So after her imprisonment, she zigzagged through Germany. She was treated like an outcast. She was called a revolutionary whore. So then the young writer August Wilhelm Schlegel came to her rescue. So he married her, gave her a new name and with that a new beginning, and then took her in 1796 to Jena, which was this small town in Germany about 150 miles southwest of Berlin, where she became the heart of the Jena set.
Just an amazing story. And I get the sense from what you write that you yourself identify quite strongly with Carolina. I mean, partly because of your own personal history. Is that fair to say?
Yes. So I was a single mom. I think I have a quite fierce sense of independence, which sometimes kind of turned into something slightly more egotistical. I'm not sure if I identified with her, but there was definitely, I sympathized with her, let's say it like this.
Yeah. There's one line that you say in your prologue, maybe some of my choices were reckless, but they were mine. And this strikes me as basically the credo of the Romantic movement, this belief in self-determination, that you are going to create your own destiny and not bow to outside pressures.
Yes, so I think at the heart of this book is really the tension between the breathtaking possibilities of free will and the pitfalls of selfishness. And it's a balancing act, which I think we all, to different degrees, have to negotiate. So I'm interested in history in order to understand why we are who we are. So we live in a society that's obsessed with the self. I mean, there's a whole generation called the me generation. So for me, it was a way to ask questions such as, when did we become such a selfish species? When did we expect that we can determine our own lives? When did we first ask how to be free? And the answers, really, I found in this town, Jena in Germany.
So the premise of your book is that the idea of the self was basically invented in this university town of Jena, Germany, in the 1790s, which is a very audacious thing to say, really.
Well, it obviously is not invented, but it's, I think it is put at the center stage of thinking. What happened there is that we have this group of rebellious thinkers, poets, philosophers, and writers, which, although most of their names are not very well known to the English-speaking world, are the literary superstars in Germany, kind of names school children grow up with. And one of them was the philosopher Johann Gottlieb Fichte, and he was quite a character, I think. So he was feared for his volatile temperament. He gave his lectures at the university dressed in riding boots, spurs, and his whip in hand. And there was nothing gentle about him. So he stomped, he insulted, he shouted, he ate his snuff tobacco rather than inhaling it.
And you say his lectures were packed. He was the superstar of the university.
Thing. Yes. So Jena is a small town of about 4,500 inhabitants, and there were almost 900 students. So they very much dominated the small town. And half of them, or more than half of them, went to Fichte's lectures. So they were spilling out into the corridors. They were standing on the benches at the back of the room. They were standing sometimes on ladders outside to look through the window. So they actually called him the Bonaparte of philosophy, because he revolutionized the way we think about us. At a time when Europe was very much in the iron fist of absolutism, he said there were no God-given or absolute truth. The source of all reality is the self, which for us might not sound that extraordinary, because we are so used to understanding the world around us through the prism of our mind. But at that time, it was a radically new idea, because for centuries, philosophers had said that the world was ruled by a divine hand.
And Fichte had a word for this. I mean, the Ich.
The Ich.
I mean, that was his word for self.
It's the German word for self, the Ich, and then the external world he called the Non-Ich, so the non-self, so everything that was not the self. But what it meant is that he gave the self the power to be really the supreme ruler of the world, not God, not kings or queens. And that was an absolutely thrilling idea. So from then on, these young men and women kind of experimented with this idea.
So connect this to what's happening today. I think it's fair to say that we are obsessed with ourselves and self-expression and self-fulfillment. And maybe the modern version of this is the cult of authenticity. Is that all kind of an updated version of what Fichte was talking about more than 200 years ago?
Yes, I think so. So I think it began in Jena. So I think underpinning all of this are two very crucial questions. Who am I as an individual, and who am I as a member of a society? So how can I live a meaningful, self-fulfilled kind of life in which I pursue my dreams, but be at the same time a good member of society? So this is this balancing act, and it all started in the last decade of the 18th century in Jena.
Yeah, and to set the context for this, I mean, this happened within 10 years of the French Revolution, which really had just turned Europe upside down. And then immediately following the French Revolution, Napoleon seized power in France and was marching across Europe, conquering one country after another. And these writers and philosophers in Jena seemed to be just thrilled by all of this, by the French Revolution, by Napoleon. He seemed to be kind of the embodiment of the romantic ideal.
Yes. So I think in order to really understand how extraordinary it was what these guys and women did, is to understand, you know, the world in which they were born into was one of despotism, control, and inequality. So this was a time when monarchs could pretty much decide about everything in their subject lives, from refusing marriage permissions to selling their subjects as mercenaries to other nations. And then the French Revolution happens in 1789, and it's an event that's so dramatic that it really affects everybody in Europe. And when the French revolutionaries declared all men as equal, they promised the possibility of a new social order based on the power of ideas. So this is the moment when philosophical ideas kind of leave the ivory tower of rarefied thought and arrive in the minds of ordinary people. So Fichte's Ich philosophy is very much lit on the spark of the French Revolution.
Yeah. So we should talk about some of the people who are part of this group that you call the Jena set, and much more than just Fichte. And it was not just their ideas that were so exciting. I mean, they led large lives, scandalous lives. Tell me about some of these people.
So Maybe the most famous one to the American audience is Goethe, who was Germany's most celebrated poet. But by the time the younger generation arrived in the 1790s, he was very much part of the small duchy's government, and he had run out of kind of his creative juices, really. So he was struggling, and the younger generation came, and their radical ideas really rejuvenated him, and he felt very much inspired. But he, for example, lived with his mistress, who was also the mother of his son. It's really one big soap opera. So there's, for example, Friedrich Schlegel, who's the brother of Caroline's husband. He lived with his lover, together with his brother and Caroline, in their house in Jena, which I think is really the first commune in Germany. And they all had lovers on the side. He also wrote an autobiographical erotic novel in which he invited his readers to his bedroom, watching him and his lover making love in quite explicit detail.
And it's worth pointing out, I mean, this is the 1790s. I mean, it's just like, wow, this is amazing that they would be writing about these things.
Although I will say that the 1790s were definitely more sexually liberated, say, than the Victorian times. Because you have, for example, Wilhelm von Humboldt, who is Alexander von Humboldt's older brother. He lived with his wife and her lover together in their house in Jena, very openly joining into all of the social activities. And then you have Caroline, who gave birth after her one-night stand to a child who married August Wilhelm Schlegel, but his brother Friedrich was in love with her. She then took Friedrich Schelling, who was a young philosopher, who was also part of this group, as her lover. He was 12 years younger and a very close friend to her husband. But her husband didn't mind because they had come to the unusual arrangement of an open marriage. So, and it just kind of goes on and on and on like this. So it's such a confusing mess who's sleeping with whom that one of the friends calls the Schlegel household a big pigsty. So there's a lot of kind of fun going on the side. So big ideas, but quite inflated egos also, and a lot of fighting.
Let's talk a little bit more about one of these people you've mentioned, Friedrich Schelling, who became the superstar after Fichte, this brilliant young philosopher who became, what, a full professor at the age of 23?
So everything that he did young. So at the age of 11, he informed his teachers that they couldn't teach him anything anymore. So he's years ahead of his peers. He wrote his first philosophy book at the age of 20 and then followed it every year with another one. So by the age of 23, he was so famous that he was made professor of philosophy at the university, the youngest professor at the university. He was hugely popular with his students, so much so that people of Jena could tell when his lectures were about to start by the great number of young men rushing across the market square. Schelling arrived in 1798, and he really knew how to stage himself. So there are wonderful descriptions by his students how he entered this packed auditorium slowly and deliberately. He would kind of light two candles at the lectern, leaving the auditorium in the dark, but his students could kind of see him lit up in the candlelight, like a halo around his head, basically, and everybody's really quiet, and they were waiting for him to talk. And a lot of the students describe an almost religious epiphany by listening to these ideas, because what he did is he said that the self and nature were identical. So instead of dividing the world into mind and matter, as many, many philosophers had done for centuries, Schelling insisted that everything was one. So the living and the non-living world, according to him, were ruled by the same underlying principle.
And that is such a modern idea, this idea that the human mind, you cannot separate it from the natural world, that we are part of all this interconnected web of life. I mean, that is the foundations of modern ecological thinking. And here was Schelling talking about it 200 years ago.
Exactly. So he basically said everything's kind of interconnected in one big living organism. It means that being in nature, be it walking through a forest or climbing up a mountain or, you know, wandering along a meadow, was always self-discovery. And that was an absolutely thrilling idea. And this is this philosophy of oneness. And that becomes very, very important then for the American transcendentalists and the English romantics. This idea that we can discover ourselves in nature. So you have, say, Coleridge and Wordsworth, for example, who are these walking poets who literally found their voice in nature.
Hmm.
Because they had kind of stripped nature of wonder and awe.
So I want to bring these ideas up to the present. We already talked about how our modern obsession with self and with self-expression is, at least in Western culture, kind of describes much of what seems to make us flourish or tick in the modern world. And I'm wondering how much of that comes from the Yenisei, and also, is there a problem here? Are we too obsessed with the self, and do we need to somehow rethink some of these ideas?
So I think there's a direct line to the Yenisei from how we are today, and that we are such a society that's so obsessed with the self. But what I will say is I don't think that's the selfishness that they intended. Quite the opposite. They liberated the self with the intention of creating a better society. So this was very much against the backdrop of absolutism and despotism. And Fichte always said that freedom is always tightly interwoven with our moral duty. So freedom gives us the choice how to act and how to behave, but it always comes with its twin, moral duty and moral obligations. And I think that is the problem that we have.
That's the piece that we've lost today.
Exactly.
We celebrate freedom, but that sense of moral duty has kind of disappeared.
Exactly. And I think that's the problem, because there is nothing more exciting than free will and self-determination. But obviously, it only works if we also take other people into consideration. It can't be that I'm only concerned about that I'm free. We are only free if also others are free. Then we are a free society.
I want to come back to what happened to these remarkable people in Jena. This whole movement, this flourishing, really only lasted about 10 years, if that. It sort of seems like they were, you know, so tempestuous, so brilliant, so creative, and so fragile in some ways as well. And everyone was sleeping with everyone else, and it all kind of fell apart rather quickly, didn't it?
Yes, it did. Very sadly. But I think very often these revolutionary ideas or revolutions collapse very quickly. So what happened is they experiment with this kind of free will and freedom, and the pendulum swings too much into the extreme. So they all become, not all, but some of them become a little bit, you know, too egotistical and have inflated ego. So they all fall out with each other. So they turn into what Friedrich Schlegel's lover calls a republic of despots. So you have these friends who had relentlessly attacked the literary establishment, feeling quite invincible, then began to turn against each other. So you have Friedrich Schlegel, for example, writing savage reviews about Schiller. You have Schiller calling Caroline Madame Lucifer. Their enemies quite like it. So there's a wonderful quote where one of them says, "Isn't it fun watching these philosophers kind of attack each other? It's like seeing starving rats eating each other." So they all fall out and go their different paths. So they leave Jena. They go to Paris, to Rome, to Berlin. Some of them remain in, continue to correspond. And some of them never speak to each other ever again.
Well, this is such an amazing story. Thank you so much. This has been fun.
Thank you for having me.
That's Steve Paulson talking with Andrea Wolf, the author of Magnificent Rebels, The First Romantics, and The Invention of the Self.